Blog Talk Radio.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Though your world is torn apart and you're left with a broken heart and you feel that there's no real healing inside. Oh no, but this I know it's more than a feeling. Jesus said it in his word, you cannot feel it, just believe it. He'll make everything, he'll make it all right. He will make it all right.
Once again, welcome to Don't Give Up Radio. I am your host, Jackie Wayans, and it is a pleasure to be speaking to you another week after we face more challenges, more difficulties, and we have overcome because we are still here to listen. We're still here to be encouraged and to tell other people of what we have been through so that they can be encouraged. And that's the cycle of things. You know, when we think about cycles, we often think about it in a negative way, in terms of negative things. But they're positive cycles. There is the reality that we all will go through dark periods in our lives. We all will have midnight hours. But it's what we do with it. You know, it's not just enough to persevere and overcome for yourself. But the story, the histories that we've lived through is so that we can turn around and touch another life, encourage another life, another person, and help them to see their value and their purpose, that there is a God that cares, that loves, that sees, and that we're not invisible. And as hectic as life can be, with things pulling at us at every side, it can make us think at times that we are invisible, but we are not. And, you know, when it comes to our self-worth or confidence or even body image, the world around us, the media is constantly pumping things at us. But, you know, there's a safer place and there's a better place to get a sense of who you are and what your purpose is in life. And that voice is very soft. And if you tune into it, I guarantee you, you will hear it. So tonight, we're going to be joined by Sarah Minerva, who is actually WBFF competitor, and she is going to share a little bit about that journey, and not only about doing something so wonderful, but to do it as a Christian and what that actually feels like and looks like. I know myself, I would love to do it, but it takes so much courage. So, Sarah, I applaud you just right off the top for just having the courage to step out and you know, take your health and your fitness to that level. That's quite amazing. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Jackie.
No problem. We actually know each other. We've known each other for a couple of decades, although we haven't seen each other every year within there. Thank goodness for social media. It keeps us connected. And that's how I found out what you were doing and started to track you through the months and weeks of preparation for, you know, coming to the point of the competition. So we're going to have everybody hear about that part of it, but I want to take them back to the piece that they don't know, because everyone notes the time that we get the Grammy Award or we get the Oscar or we get some kind of recognition. We're walking across the stage, but the process of getting there is the thing that no one ever sees. And I always like to go all the way back. So let's start with your family life growing up. Talk to me, you know, do you have siblings? What was your family life like? Just give us that part.
Yeah, sure. Well, I grew up in New York. And my father was Jewish and my mother was Puerto Rican. Oh, he's Puerto Rican. I have a sister who is also a competitor. In fact, she just won the gold competition just this past weekend for physique. So we're really just proud of her, and we were all just, you know, cheering her on. And I have a half brother from my dad's first marriage. And basically, we had a lot of cousins and family, big Puerto Rican family, lots of food, lots of parties, and lots of fun. We had a lot of fun growing up.
Okay, well, that's an interesting combination, Jewish and Spanish there. What was life like at home?
Growing up, it was interesting, just being biracial, having the two sides. My father was very, would always talk about religion and about God. And my mother was, it was more about the culture. It was more about ties being there for one another. Growing up, unfortunately, my father had a problem with alcoholism, so that kind of played into our whole family dynamics. You know, and I've grown to know that he just really had, he was just someone who was not a bad person. He was just somebody who didn't know how to manage his pain in a healthy way.
Right. And so when someone is at that place, I love the way you say that, you know, alcoholics are self-medicating. They're self-medicating
right.
some type of pain.
Right.
And the fact that you say, you know, he really just didn't know how to handle it, and so that's how he was coping. But one of the things I know from doing this show over the years is that if you're dealing with someone who's an alcoholic while they're in that state, they're usually a different person, and that wears and tears on the family life. What kind of experiences did you have in terms of, you know, was there any kind of verbal emotional abuse or anything like that that was happening?
Yeah, sure. There's a lot of emotional abuse, definitely. I think there's two partners in that whole scenario. There's the alcoholic, and then there's the codependent. And sometimes, as you just stated, that the codependent can be just as ill as the alcoholic, and you know, can go into their own, I guess, addictions or own world in their head. So it was abusive, but in both senses, it was verbal, it was physical, definitely physical. And I think also the family dynamics was also a little bit. The boundaries were not very clear. And because of that, in some therapy sessions I've had, it could borderline on sexual abuse as well, because there are certain things that I was exposed to that as a young kid I shouldn't have been exposed to, you know, pornography or just, you know, affairs or knowing about certain things, or even just emotional, it's almost like an emotional marriage with your parents, where you would hear the difficulties and they would sort of spill onto me instead of the partner. In a healthy marriage, it would be the partners working those things out, not the partner and the children
right.
working that out.
So, given the fact that this was your upbringing, what did it lead you to believe about relationships and how they worked?
Well, really, that relationships were supposed to hurt. That it was something that, if it hurt, if it tugged on your heart so much and you gave so much and you didn't get much in return, that was normal.
Mm.
It was very caretaking. It wasn't a partner. It was very caretaking. And so it led me to some relationships when I was younger, one in particular when I was right after college. That was abusive as well. So I just went into the same cycle as my parents. Just emotional abuse and physical abuse from the person that I was dating at the moment.
Wow. And with your parents, did they sustain that marriage relationship or did they eventually separate?
Well, they had a 20-year difference between the two of them. My father was 20 years older than my mother. There were a lot of issues outside of just the dynamics of the alcoholism. Just two different generations living, or actually three, really, in the house. And unfortunately, my mother did have an affair, and she ended up with someone else, and she left the house. But it was commonplace in my family where my mother would have affairs, and my father also. Mm-hmm. That tugged at my heart a lot. It made me very dated people and towards relationships, and I really didn't trust many people.
Right. I mean, it had to have been difficult as a young person seeing all of this, you know, carrying secrets, just trying to be, you know, the neutralizer and deal with all the emotions that you're going through as a developing young person. And,
right.
you know, sometimes I have guests on the show and they were raised in households where they always went to church, and some of them resented it and some of them loved it. But it doesn't sound to me like you were going to Sunday school every week. I do know that you are a Christian now, but how did you actually develop your relationship? How did it begin? Where were the first little signs that he was reaching out to you?
I think he really was reaching out to me since I was little. I was in elementary school, and there was a girl named Joanne. And me being the only Puerto Rican person in my elementary school, a person of color, and also one of the few Jewish people. We lived in a very Irish, Italian neighborhood, but mostly Irish, Catholic. And there was a young girl there named Joanne, and we were in about fourth grade or third grade, and she used to always wear dresses at school. And this was in the 70s, so we started wearing jeans and pants, and so this was just different. And she was just kind and just different. There was something about her. And one day I turned to her and I said, you know, I asked her what her religion was, I think, but she said, I'm a Christian. And I went, oh, you're Catholic, because that's all I knew. And she said, no, I'm Christian.
Mm.
And that was one of the first things that sort of stuck out in my heart, and how the Lord really reached me, because apparently there was something different than just the Catholics that I knew that just went to church, you know, on Easter and you know, on Christmas and had the saints. You know, I knew I was familiar with that because of my grandparents.
Right.
They had the saints. They didn't live as, you know, the Bible says we should live, but they'd have the saints and they would pray to the saints. Mm-hmm. So this was different. This was somebody who was different. And being a young person in New York City, going on the subway, I encountered the Jews for Jesus one summer.
Oh,
and I remember coming home to my dad and saying, Dad, you know, what about Jesus? And he said, oh, they're confused Jews. And I was like, well, maybe, but what if they're not? What if he is the Messiah? And we need to know that, right? Because we're looking for the Messiah. And so that also got me thinking, and just a number of things. People on the subway, one young woman came on the subway, and I was very much into the occult growing up, because I was looking for something that made some sort of sense of the chaos in my family, in my life.
Right.
And somebody came on the subway, and she had a glow about her, literally a white veil around her, like a glow.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in the occult, you can actually see certain things on Christians, the glow. The white light, and came and she sat next to me, and I had a sticker on my portfolio that said, I was going to art school, and it said, do not lead me into temptation, because I can find it myself. And she turned to me and she said, Jesus you have to go into temptation. Jesus can lead you out of that. And it stuck with me. Doesn't matter what happens, that just stuck with me.
Well, I mean, you had a lot on your plate, and it's awesome to hear these moments where God was reaching out to you and revealing who he was. And I love, you know, Jews for Jesus is a wonderful organization. I've gone to a few of their events, and it's so beautiful to see the connection between Torah and the New Testament, and it's more unifying than it is separating. I believe a lot more Christians need to understand the Torah so that we can communicate better with our Jewish brothers and sisters. But clearly, though, you had an issue with self-image, you know, confidence issues, all these type of things that were really negative and just swirling around you. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the shift and when things started for you, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
them.
I know that you love me. I know that you care. I know that you feel for me. And I know that you are there. Do I really know the depth of your love? Do I really know the passion you have for me? I really can't imagine through your eyes how you see me.
How much God loves us and how he sees us. And a lot of times if we had a glimpse of that perception, we would walk different and talk different. But because we do see the faces of our parents or our colleagues or our classmates, we oftentimes allow those things to develop our self image, our persona of who we are. And we're here on Don't Give Up Radio tonight with Sarah Minerva, who is really sharing with us about her journey, and I feel it's a very courageous one. Now, Sarah, where we left off is, you know, dad, alcoholic, you know, a tumultuous relationship, marriage relationship between the two of them, and you seeing things and being exposed to things. And, you know, when we talked, I know that you actually wanted to get into physical fitness in your 20s, but you were discouraged from that. Who discouraged you, meaning, you know, what was the relationship and what were things that were said to you?
The relationship that I entered into right after, after high school and college, that was a very abusive relationship. And at that time, I really thought that that's what normalcy was, that it was supposed to be something that tore, like I mentioned before, tore at your heart, that shouldn't be healthy. It just wasn't healthy. And he really just told me that I really couldn't, slowly, you know, throughout the time I was with him, he started taking more and more control of my life, my checkbook, who I was, my thinking, how I placed things on the conveyor belt at the supermarket, how I drove a car. I ended up not even driving half the time, a lot of the time, because I was so afraid. I was just living in fear. And he told me that I wasn't an athlete. He himself was very athletic. He was able to pick up any ball or any game, and he'll be able to just naturally go at it. With me, it takes a little bit more time. I need some more discipline. I'll pick it up eventually, but I just need more time. And because I guess I wasn't a natural athlete, he had told me that I couldn't achieve anything, really, anything without him, basically. Mm. That I was stupid, I was an idiot, and that the idea of me competing or even having a goal set for myself, that I just couldn't do it. That, you know, why are you saying that? My nickname was Bird. Why are you saying that, Bird? Because you just know you can't do that. It's not for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually did a show where we were talking about names and the fact that people tend to name us and whether or not we take on those names or not and what they mean. And so here you are being belittled on every task that you're doing. You're being told you're not good enough. And so you didn't pursue it at that time. You didn't go after it because you believed it. You kind of believed that you couldn't do it. You know, they take dramatic things to happen in our lives at times to kind of shake us up and wake us up. And you had a couple of experiences. Can you share with us where your mental shift started to begin?
It started to begin after my parents separated. My mother was living with her boyfriend. My dad was stressed. He already had high blood pressure and some heart issues, but he ended up having more heart issues and ended up on dialysis. And my sister and I started to take care of him. We'd take him to dialysis. We would take him to hospital. Sometimes we had to run him to the hospital, the ER, in the middle of the night. And in that, you know, he stopped drinking. I started praying with him and for him. We would sit and read the Bible. And he was semi-open to hearing most things, just not about Jesus at that time. And he continued to get sick. So finally he had to have some major surgeries. And he was in the hospital for close to 4 months just before he died. And that sort of started changing my mindset that there was something. I didn't want to live the way that he did. I didn't want to live trapped and sad and negative, because a lot of those things happened to him, not just before but my mother left, but definitely afterwards. He didn't have a positive attitude. I mean, it was just very stressful for him.
And, of course, it was a toll that was taken from years of alcohol abuse and eating whatever he wanted and all those, you know, negative emotions that he was, you know, bringing about in the household. So it was cumulative.
Right. Definitely. Then that started changing my mindset.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, that just sort of changed my mindset as far as how I lived my life as far as health, how what I wanted to eat, and I didn't want to end up sick. And that sort of changed my thinking at that point, and that I wanted more out of life.
Excellent. You know, it's sad to say, but there are times when it just kind of takes something to shake us up and wake us up just a little bit. And so the situation with your dad's health started you thinking down that line. And I know that when you have siblings in a household also that, you know, you can have siblings facing the same thing, but they don't embrace it the same way. And you have a sister, and of course you can't tell her story, but you can share a little bit with us in terms of how it impacted her to be in the same household that you were in.
I think that she's asked me a number of times, like, you know, how come we ended up in different paths? And I think my addiction was pretty much the relationship. But for her, the way she dealt with the pain was that she picked up also alcoholism. And by the grace of God, she did become a Christian, but she still struggled badly with it because it's just something that you just really can't walk away from. And God gives us the grace eventually to overcome those things. And she's been sober now for close to 6-7 years now. So that's been just a sweet victory. It's been wonderful to watch her and to watch her change and bloom and to grow. And
awesome.
Grow her knowledge.
I definitely would love to hear her story at some point as well. On the show. So, you know, all these things are working together to help develop you. And in doing so, you actually start to realize what a healthy relationship looks like, and you found one. Share that with us.
I did. Well, I was always my friend Joe, we were always friends from when I was first a Christian. In fact, he had prayed for me, and he was in the part of the youth group. After I broke up with the person I was with, we started talking, and we had always remained friends. And about a year afterwards, we decided he asked me to marry him. And it was one of those things where we did everything the way that the Lord really wanted us to do it. And it was something that was just sweet. It was something like, have you ever had the experience where you walk with the Lord and you just know you're just being carried through something? And that was just the way it was. It was just, the Lord was just carrying us through. We both had been through some relationship issues. And this, we just felt like the Lord was just placing us together. And I remember we were sitting one day outside of Starbucks. And I said to him, when I had first broken up with the guy I was with, I said, I don't know, what is the Lord doing? And he looked at me and he goes, something wonderful. Mm. You know, and that was just the way it was. You know, and we prayed together. And we just served together, you know. And but unfortunately, in about 2 years of marriage, we had our first daughter. But after 2 years of marriage, he was diagnosed with liver cancer. Mm-hmm. So it was around Easter time. I remember we were at a service, and it was something that I was just talking about this recently, you know, just today. That it was almost like prophetic things that he had said were prophetic. We went to the oncologist, and we didn't know exactly what was going on. We had done the CAT scan, and he had driven his car over to the doctor's office, and I had driven my car with our baby, and I drove him over to his car to get it, and he said, I went 1 foot out of the car, and he said, okay, I see you at home, baby. And it was like, it was prophetic. It was this thing that was hanging in the air, and I knew at that point that we were going to, he would see me at home, like home in heaven, that was going to go this way. Mm. There was little things like that.
Well, you know, that is devastating, though, because it's like you went through all of this metamorphosis and you find this person, you're in this healthy place, and then his life is lost due to cancer. And there are many people who are listening who are facing cancer or have relatives that are suffering with cancer or lost. In fact, the first song that I played, How You See Me, is on the B. Renee CD, and that was her daughter singing, and they had just lost their their husband and father to a long struggle with cancer. So it's something that has become common to hear, but at the same time, you're never expecting to hear it, especially when you feel like you've done everything right and you've found your true love. And all of this is actually leading you somewhere because, you know, God has purposes and plans for us that are beyond our understanding. But what I want to know right now is how did you...
I think it really was, it was a struggle. It was not something that I did. It was something that the Lord did with me or through me, really with me. It was not something that I did perfectly. I mean, there were days that I would sit and cry and say, well, if I did everything perfectly this time around, then I should have had a payback. And I'm just being honest. It was as if my salvation depended on my performance with the Lord. And I had to come to a place where it had nothing to do with my performance, whether I was like in the first relationship where I was sort of in the world and not, and sort of in the church, or I was totally going to Sunday school, reading my Bible, doing devotions, none of it mattered. It just mattered that the God of this universe died for me and that he was the one that was carrying me. It was not about me. It was not about me. And it never will be. It was about him and his story through me.
You
the
know,
grace that he had.
I often share Romans 10, 9, and 10 on the show that if you confess your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead and he lives forevermore, that you shall be saved. And that's where this strength comes from that you're talking about. You know, if you had not found that initially and that was able to begin to transform your mind and even lead you out of all of the mess from, you know, your childhood and bad relationships to this place of love that you are in, and even getting through the painful devastation of the loss. So that was one courageous step. But then you took another courageous step, and that is entering into a mindset of becoming physically fit and strong and going after that thing that you were told in your 20s that you could not do. So I wanted to hear how did you, you know, position yourself to decide that that's what you wanted for yourself? And, I'll just ask that first.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that last sentence?
Sure. So where did you find the courage to decide that you were going to go after this physical fitness dream that you had when you were in your 20s, but you were told, you know, you'll never be able to do that. You're not good enough. You're not strong enough. Where did you muster up the strength, or why did you muster up the strength to go after it again?
I think because after so many things I've gone through, and I moved from New York to down south by myself with my daughter, I think just trying to... With Joe being sick, it was as if every single day mattered. Every single day counts. And sort of like if you didn't do it today, you may not get the chance tomorrow. You know, sometimes it's just not judicious to sit down and with somebody, to talk with somebody. I mean, you may not get that chance again. So I guess it's the same. It comes from the same place. Whereas I may not get that chance again, because when Joe was, just before he was diagnosed, he was fine the year before. And then next year he was gone. And some of the things that he had wanted to do, call up somebody, take his dad out for a golf outing, sit with somebody, go visit, he didn't get to do. So it's almost like if something is on your heart, and it's God's will, I'm always praying God's will, then go for it. And just try. You may fail. In that failure, you may learn. But you might get it, too.
You actually just brought up my part B question, and that is this concept that, you know, you're going after something you feel that God put in your heart that you wanted to do. And one of the questions that I tweeted out early today is why, you know, why is there a conflict between fitness and faith? There seems to be. And did you have to address that question for yourself, or did people you know, within the church family come up to you or approach you in terms of, you know, pursuing this dream and whether they felt that it was appropriate or, you know, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I did have to come up against a few, I guess, people that were sort of giving their opinion about it. And that to me was fine. I think I've gone through some Al-Anon meetings and just to hear them out and hear where they were from. I mean, I had been what my take on it was, but I did get a couple of people who had said that it was not appropriate for a Christian to do bodybuilding, or a female Christian to do bodybuilding, that it was something that was overly sexual. I had to kind of address that in my heart too, that what was the reason why I was doing it? Was I doing it for attention, or was I doing it because this was a goal that I had and it was something that I had wanted to do and it was something that that was in my heart as far as like a goal for myself to see how physically fit, how disciplined I could be. And I came to the conclusion that being fit in bodybuilding, it's a similar situation with your spiritual health. So every day you have to discipline yourself mentally and physically. You have to get up when you don't want to. You have to eat what you don't want to. And there's a lot of discipline and that goes into it, a lot of planning, goal setting. And I think like in your Christian life too, sometimes you don't want to get up early. You don't want to pray. And I sometimes don't want to pray. I don't feel like I want to pray. But those are the days that I need to pray.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a strong correlation. And a lot of the people on my team, my coach is a Christian, very strong Christian, and a number of the girls that are on my team with Coach Melinda, they're also Christians. And actually, before we went on stage, we prayed before we set a foot on stage, that the Lord would be glorified in us, that it wouldn't be about our sexuality, but it would be about glorifying God's creation. And I hope that makes sense in some way to some people.
Right. You know, well, I'm thinking about the verse that's often used to kind of, you know, there's a verse in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7 and 8. And 7 says, you know, but refuse profane and old wives' fables and exercise thyself rather in godliness. And then the next verse actually says, for bodily exercise profits little, but godliness is profitable unto all things, excuse me, having promise of the life that now is and that which is to come. And so mm-hmm. I've heard that verse used to kind of say, you know, exercise really, it profits very little. What matters is a godly life, right? And of course, I'm not disputing that in any way, but I have an image of this verse that is actually a lot greater than that, because this verse was talking about those who were entering into extreme training, you know, whether it was for the military or for Olympic, you know, type games. And so they were really conditioning, like you said, that discipline. They were conditioning their bodies. This was real training. We're talking about real athletes here. And we know that that had a profit to it. It had a physical profit to it. Whatever they were trying to achieve as a goal had a profit to it. And so what I see this verse saying is that in comparison, as much as we can see the gain and the profit that being physically fit has to offer, that godliness is going to take you even further. It allows a higher launching pad. So it's not mm-hmm. saying, hey, don't exercise. Let your body right. become a wasteland. You know, it's saying because, you know, if you can think of this skill and this ability and you see the soldiers and you see the athletes and how much it benefits for them to exercise themselves physically, now imagine this greater space and place where godliness is giving you that way of having a spiritual exercise, if you will. And so your rewards are going to be not just for this life, because the reality is this body is just for this life, but it's going to be beyond that as well and into your eternal life. And so we can appreciate that. But by no means was the scripture saying, don't exercise, don't take care of your physical body. And you made some good points when we were speaking about certain sins that, you know, when I say sin, it's not hitting the mark. It's anything that we think, say, or do that's outside of the mind of God. And there are a lot of attitudes that we have towards health that aren't biblical. And you named a couple of them. Do you want to share that?
Sure. I think, you know, the Bible talks more about gluttony and sloth a whole lot more than it does talk about exercise. I think it's something that we just don't, it's one of those sins in the church that we sort of gloss over. And I mean, it's okay to have the church potluck. And you know, Jackie, you and I know both from being in the same churches, that we used to have those big potluck Sunday meals. And that was okay. It was almost like, well, we're going to go to heaven anyway. So we can eat this, and let's ignore the
just pray over it. It'll be fine. It could have, you know, 5 pounds of fat and 3 pounds of sugar, but pray over it, and you're going to be good. You know.
But I know we're good. We're supposed to be good stewards of all that God has given to us, and that includes our physical health. You know, I think of people that I've known that if their ministry has been cut short. I mean, the Lord knows exactly when he's going to take us home. I mean, I'm not denying that.
Right.
But the possibility that you could have had a longer ministry because you could have taken a little bit better care of yourself, or you could have taken that extra mile or put down the cheesecake.
Right. Or it might be not even that your time was cut short, but because, you know, a lot of our prayer meetings in this country are over two issues, and that's health issues and financial issues, right?
Right.
So imagine, and then doctors will tell you that most of the health issues are self-induced health issues, right? Diabetes, hypertension. There are a lot of things that we're suffering with that we caused ourselves because of years of poor choices. And there is an effect on our human bodies when we aren't good stewards of this vessel that God's given us. And so we might still be here to do his work, but it's the way. Like, we're doing it with so much pain or so much discomfort and having to take so many medications, you know. So you put yourself in a position to say, I'm going to put my body in the best possible physical peak condition and to completely be alive. And I think that's a great point to this, because some of us are living half lives. Like, we're almost got one foot in the ground already the way we're living. We're not really embracing the life that we've been giving. Do you have any thoughts on that?
The only thing that really comes to mind is that, you know, the verse that came to mind was the power of life and death is in the tongue. And it's also a physical, spiritual and mental. I think that the part of the discipline is mental, because you can physically discipline yourself to do something, but if your mental will is not in it, you're not going to get up in the morning. You're not going to set the alarm clock earlier, and you have to really have a different mindset. And that's the same thing with your spiritual life as well. Your mindset, you know, it says to renew your mind. Your mindset needs to be renewed. It needs to be set on something, set on something that's a little bit not so base, but something a little higher, something that is worthy. And I think we're as a society we've come away from that, thinking as if in a higher plane, not so base so often.
Well, we're going to be fully alive, and when we come back, we're going to hear about what you've done and what you've accomplished and what's next.
Okay.
I don't want to be broken anymore. Better life than a million people.
my heart beating inside. Watch me as I come alive. You are listening to Don't Give Up Radio. I'm your host, Jackie Wayans, and we are here with a real-life WBFF competitor. After she was told that she could not do it, that she did not have the ability to do it, and you did it. Talk to us about that process, that moment when you decided to do it, the training process. Take us in. Tell us what that picture looked like.
I think it was basically a learning process, and it was something that evolved over time. As it got closer, it was like, oh my gosh, I'm actually going to do this. I had the will to do it. It just seemed like it was so far away. But each step I took, you know, sometimes it was something like it was line upon line, precept upon precept. It was like every single one more rep, one more day, one more plain chicken or this meal that I really don't want to eat. I'd rather eat a, you know, Twinkie. So it was something that evolved over the time.
How long of a period is it from when you kind of sign up to when the competitions are?
Well, for me, it was about 5 months of training, a little bit over 5 months of training, and eating correctly and knowing how to eat. My coach, really, Melinda, she's just wonderful. I couldn't speak, you know, more highly about her. She was just wonderful. I mean, she was just, okay, you know, how are you? And she's very no-nonsense, but also very loving at the same time. And she would, it was 5 months of just checking in with her, checking in with the photos. You need more water. You need to drop your carbs. It was carb cycling. And through it all, I learned how to prepare meals. I always thought that I ate in a healthy way, but this was a different type of eating. It was eating to maintain a certain form, just to maintain muscle mass. It wasn't just eating and, you know, maybe being paleo or being, you know, getting more grains, you know, in my meal. This was, at this time, you eat this, and it has to be at this time because your body responds this way to this. And it was just amazing to see the way that God has put together our bodies to work in such a way for work, really. I mean, we were made to be stewards of this earth in the Garden of Eden. We were made for a purpose. And it was so amazing to see the way that the food, what we eat, correlates to our purpose also.
That is pretty amazing. I know that, you know, people might miss what you said there and how important it is, the fact that you have a coach. And I was at a small business conference last week, and they were just sharing about the fact that most successful people don't just have one coach. They have a couple. You know, if you look at a basketball mm-hmm. player, they actually have five coaches. You know, because the coaches for different things and to target different issues. And you know, whether it's a singer or whatever task you want to go into, people have mentors and coaches and people who are in their ear that they're accountable to make sure that they're hitting that mark. And that's something that we need to press towards as believers, no matter what it is that we're reaching towards, mm-hmm. is to make sure that we're reaching that mark and we're doing it in a way that is going to, you know, in whatever you do, whether it's eating or drinking, that you glorify God. And so the fact that you, you know, have a coach and someone who's of like mind to help you through this process, and then to see exactly how fearfully and wonderfully made our bodies are, and that when we, you know, treat it right and put things in that belong there, we can get a response that is absolutely amazing. And so how did you feel when you started to see the muscles forming and your body changing?
I think it was exciting, especially because I'm, you know, 47 right now and not 20 when I really wanted to do it, to see my body change from, you know, 47 year-old mother to something totally different. And every day, especially closer to the show, and especially during peak week, it was like every day I would wake up and there was something new. Like, wow, that little muscle ripple wasn't there before. and to see the strength come back, you know, pulling up weights and being like, yeah, this, I got this, I can do this. It was just exciting. It was every day it was something new and it was exciting. And it was just, it was a phenomenal, I would think, I would just encourage anyone to sort of take on a kind of a challenge like that, whatever it might be for them, to say, you know what, maybe today I'll just a little bit more, a little bit different, and maybe just see myself grow a little bit more. You know, I have like tomato plants in my patio, and every day I go outside in my devotions and I look at them and I see, okay, and a little more growth, there's another little flower. It's similar to that, you know, it's like this exciting growth every single day.
Well, you have grown tremendously from the young lady who had this, you know, lifestyle and self-image that could have destroyed you. But because of God and because of you yielding yourself to Him, you're of a complete different mindset. Not that you're perfect, not that you don't have days of struggle. Like you said, there's some days where you're like, I just don't want to do it. But you're not that person. You're not, and it takes years sometimes. But if we just stick with Him, He's going to see us all the way through. Our time is almost gone. I want you to tell people what you're doing now and how you're helping other people to maintain their health.
Well, right now I'm taking pretty much the summer off. We'll be possibly, as I get the right mindset, because again, I want to glorify the Lord, not myself. Possibly might compete again. As long as it's the right motivation. And I really have to pray about that and see how the Lord really, you know, if He wants me to, first of all, and if I can do it without it drawing attention to me, whether it would draw attention to Him and His glory. Other than that, yeah, I've been just working with other people. I've been helping a couple of other people lose weight, make their own weight goals. For weight loss, and I have a website called, I work with Avacare, and I have a website which I think is in the link. People can look at that, and also, for me, I like to get a little bit more creative with healthy cooking and healthy eating, so I'll be posting some more photos on Instagram, different recipes, and just different flavors, because we don't have to eat with tons of sugar and lard and all that to have a healthy meal and to have something that's enjoyable. There are other alternatives and there are other ways of making food healthy but also tasty. So I'd like to explore that a little bit more too.
Excellent. It all sounds good to me and I will definitely be watching. I remember I saw one post you did probably on one of those days where you thought, I just don't want to eat another piece of grilled chicken. And you posted the picture of this like decadent dessert and you're like, after I go through this competition, this is what I'm having. I'm thinking to myself, no, she's not. She's not going to put herself through all this grueling pain for 5 months so that she can eat that. That's not going to happen, you know. But we all have our moments.
No, I never did eat that, but I did name it. I named it Baby.
You named it Baby. Okay, well, sometimes maybe that's all we need to do. Thank you for sharing your story. I want you guys who are listening to know that God doesn't pick and choose. He's a blesser. He blesses down on those who are just and unjust, whether you think you deserve it or not. He's a good God, so I want you to be your own best hero this week and know that the greatest lover of all gave His life to you and that, Sarah, you can actually continue to sing to God be the glory, great things He has done, and not only Sarah, but everyone who's endured this week and made it through something, this is for you.
Amen.
my life. Let it be, please.